He walked with her to the old green Land Rover in the car park, and as she started the engine, he told her through the open window, "I still think that you should stay over here at the Hall. It must be an hour and a half's drive across to Brandsbury. Each way, that's 3 hours a day. We're going to have a lot of work to do before we can even think of leaving for Africa." "What would people think?" she asked, as she let out the clutch. "I have never given a damn about people," he called after her. "What time will I see you tomorrow?" "I have to stop off to see the doctor in York. He's going to take the stitches out of my arm. I won't be here before 11. She stuck her head out of the window to yell back at him. The wind tossed her dark hair around her face. His fancy had always run towards dark-haired women. Rosalind had had that mysterious eastern look. He felt guilty and disloyal making the comparison, but the memory of Royanne was hard to shake off. She was the first woman who had interested him since Rosalind had gone. The admixture of her blood drew him. She was exotic enough to pique his taste for the Oriental, but English enough to speak his language and understand his sense of humour. She was educated and knowledgeable about those things that interested him, and he admired her spirit. Usually, Eastern women were trained from birth to be self-effacing and compliant. This one was different. Georgina had phoned her doctor in York to make an appointment to have the stitches removed from Royanne's arm. They left after breakfast from the cottage in Brandsbury. Georgina was driving, and Magic sat between them on the bench seat. As they turned into the village street, Royanne noticed the large man truck parked down near the post office, but she thought no more about it. Once they were out in the countryside, they found there were patches of heavy fog that in places reduced visibility to 30 yards, but Georgina made no concessions to the weather and sent the Land Rover rattling and whining through it at the top of its speed, which Royanne reflected, thankfully, was on the right side of 60 miles an hour. She glanced over her shoulder to check the road behind them and saw that the man truck was following them. Only the cab rose above the sea of low mist that surrounded it, like the conning tower of a submarine. Even as she watched it, a bank of fog intervened and swallowed it up. She turned back to listen to her mother. "This government is a troop of incompetent nincompoops," Georgina squinted her eyes against the smoke from the cigarette that dangled from her lips. She drove single-handed, stroking Magic's flowing silken ear with her free hand. "I don't mind ministers boffing themselves into a stupor, but when they start fiddling around with my pension, I get really mad." Her mother's pension from the Foreign Service was her sole source of income, and it wasn't much. "You don't truly want a Labour government, now tell the truth, Mummy," Royanne teased her. Her mother had always been the arch-conservative. Georgina wavered and then avoided the choice. "All I say is, bring back Maggie." Royanne turned slightly in her seat and glanced through the dirty rear window again. The truck was still behind them, looming out of the fog, and the trail of blue exhaust smoke that Georgina was laying behind her like the vapour trail of a jet aircraft. Up until now it had hung back, but suddenly it accelerated up behind them. "I think he wants to pass you," Royanne told Georgina mildly. The massive bonnet of the truck was only 20 feet from their rear bumper. The radiator was emblazoned with the chrome logo, MAN, and stood taller than the cab of the Land Rover, so that she could not see the face of the driver from where she sat. "Everybody wants to pass me," lamented Georgina. "Story of my life." She held the centre of the narrow road doggedly. Ryan glanced back again and saw that the truck was creeping still closer. It filled the rear window completely. The driver declutched and revved the gigantic engine menacingly. "You better give over. I think he means business." "Let him wait," Georgina grunted around her cigarette butt. "Patience is a virtue. Anyway, can't let him through here. There is a narrow stone bridge ahead of us. Know the stretch of the road like the way to my own bathroom." At that moment, the truck driver sounded his klaxon so close that it was deafening. Magic jumped up on the rear seat and barked in outrage. "Stupid bastard," Georgina swore bitterly. "What does he think he's playing at? Write down his number plate. I'm going to report him to the York police. His plates are covered with mud. I can't make it out. But it looks like a continental registration. German, I think. As if the driver had heard her protest, he slowed slightly and fell back until a gap of 20 yards opened between the two vehicles. Rayanne had swivelled right round in the seat to watch him. "That's better," Georgina said smugly. "Ruddy Hun, learning some manners." She peered ahead through the fog. "There's the bridge." For the first time, Rayanne was able to see up into the driver's cab of the truck. The driver wore a balaclava helmet that covered all but his eyes and nose with dark blue wool. It gave him a sinister and evil aspect. "Look out!" Royan screamed suddenly. "He's coming straight at us!" The engine beat of the great truck rose to a bellow that engulfed them like the sound of a gale-driven sea. For a moment Royan saw nothing but glittering steel, and then the front of the truck smashed into them from behind. She was thrown half over the back of her seat by the impact. She dragged herself up and saw that the truck had picked them up like a fox with a bird in its jaws. It carried the Land Rover forward on the steel bull bars that protected the shining chromed radiator. Georgina wrestled with the wheel, trying to maintain control, but the effort was futile. "Can't hold her! The bridge! Try and get clear!" Ryan hit the quick release buckle on her safety belt and reached for the door handle. The stone walls of the bridge were racing towards them at a terrifying pace. The Land Rover was slewing across the road, completely out of control. The door burst open in Royan's grip, but she could not push it all the way before the Land Rover was flung into the solid stonework columns that guarded the approaches to the bridge. The two women screamed in unison as the vehicle crumpled and the impact hurled them forward. The windscreen shattered as they bounced off the stone columns, and the body of the Land Rover flipped over as it went down the embankment and began to roll. Ryan was catapulted through the open door and flung clear. The slope of the bank broke her fall, but it knocked the wind out of her. She bounced and rolled down the incline and then dropped into the icy waters of the stream below the bridge. Just before her head went under, she found herself looking up at the sky and the bridge above her. She caught one last glimpse of the truck before it roared away. It was towing two huge cargo trailers. The tall bodywork of the trailers stood higher than the guardrail of the bridge. Both of the trailers were covered by a heavy green nylon tarpaulin roped down to the lugs on the body. She had only a subliminal glimpse of a large red trademark and company name painted on the side of the nearest trailer. But before she could register the name, she was plunged below the surface of the stream, and the cold and the force of her fall drove the air from her lungs. She fought her way to the surface of the river and found she had been washed some way downstream. Impeded by her sodden clothing, she floundered to the bank and used the branch of a tree to haul herself out. She knelt in the mud, coughing up the water she had swallowed and trying to assess what injury she had suffered in the collision. Then her own plight was forgotten as she heard the terrible sounds of her mother's agony from the overturned wreck of the Land Rover. In frantic haste, she clawed herself to her feet and stumbled through the wet and frosted grass to where the Land Rover lay on its back at the foot of the embankment. The bodywork was crumpled and torn, and the bright silver aluminium metal shone through where the dark green paint had been stripped away. The engine had stalled, and the front wheels were still spinning aimlessly as she reached it. "Mummy! Where are you?" she cried. And the terrible sounds never checked. She used the metal body of the vehicle to steady herself as she dragged herself towards the sound, dreading what she might find. Georgina sat on the wet earth with her back against the side of the car. Her legs were thrust out straight ahead of her. The left one was twisted so that the toe of the booted foot was pointed down into the mud at an unnatural angle. The leg was obviously broken at the knee or very close to it. This was not the cause of Georgina's distress. She held Magic in her lap and was bowed over him in an attitude of abandoned grief. The sound of it bubbled up unchecked from deep inside her. The spaniel's chest had been crushed between metal and earth. His tongue lolled from the corner of his mouth in his last smile. but the blood dripped steadily from the pink tip, and Georgina was using her scarf to wipe it away. Rayan sank down beside her mother and placed one arm around her shoulders. She had never before seen her mother weep. She hugged her hard and tried by main strength to quell the sound of her sorrow, but it went on and on. She never knew how long they sat together like that. But at last the sight of her mother's maimed leg and an awakening fear that the driver of the truck might return to finish the job roused her. She crawled up the bank and tottered into the centre of the road to stop the next car that arrived on the scene. Not until Rayan was 2 hours late for their meeting did Nicholas become sufficiently worried to phone the police in York. Fortunately, he had noticed the license plate of the Land Rover. It was an easy one for him to remember. The registration number was his mother's initials, combined with an unlucky 13. There was a delay while the woman constable checked her computer, and then she came back. "I'm sorry to have to tell you, sir, that Land Rover was involved in an accident this morning." "What happened to the driver?" Nicholas demanded brusquely. "The driver and one passenger have been taken to the Yorkminster Hospital." "Are they all right?" "I'm sorry, sir. I don't have that information." It took Nicholas 40 minutes to reach the hospital and almost as long again to trace Rayan. She was in the woman's surgical ward, sitting beside her mother's bed. Her mother had not yet come round from the anaesthetic. She looked up when Nicholas stood over her. "Are you all right? What the hell happened?" "My mother, her leg is badly smashed up. The surgeon had to put a pin in her thigh, the femur." "How are you?" "Oh, a few bruises and scrapes, nothing serious." "How did it happen?" "A truck. It pushed us off the road." "Not deliberate." Nicholas felt something inside him quail as he remembered another truck on another road, on another night. "I think so. The driver wore a mask, a balaclava. He crashed into us from behind. It must have been deliberate."
"Did you tell the police?"
She nodded. "Apparently the truck was reported stolen early this morning, long before the accident, while the driver was stopped at one of those little chef cafes. He's German, speaks no English." "That is the third time that they have tried to kill you," Nicholas told her grimly. "So I am taking over now." He went out into the hospital waiting room and used the telephone there. The chief constable of the county was a personal friend, as was the hospital administrator. By the time he returned, Georgina had come round from the anaesthetic. Although still woozy, she was comfortable as they wheeled her off to the private ward that Nicholas had arranged. The orthopaedic surgeon arrived a few minutes later. "Hello, Nick, what are you doing here?" he greeted Nicholas. Rayan was surprised how many people he knew. Then he turned his attention to Georgina. "How are you feeling?" "We have got ourselves a nice little compound fracture. Looks like confetti in there. We've managed to put it all together again, but you're going to be with us for 10 days at the very least." "Right you are, young lady," Nicholas told Rayan as they left Georgina sleeping. "What more do you need to convince you? My housekeeper has made up a room for you at the hall. I'm not letting you wander around on your own any more. Otherwise, next time they try to cull you, they may have a little more luck." She was still too shaken and upset to argue, and she climbed meekly into the front seat of the Range Rover and let him drive her first to have her stitches removed and then back to Quentin Park. As soon as they arrived, he sent her up to her bedroom. "The cook will send dinner up to you. Make sure you take the sleeping pill that the doc gave you. Somebody will fetch your gear from Bransbury if you give the key to your mother's cottage to Mrs. Street. In the meantime, my housekeeper has set out some nightclothes and a toothbrush in your room for you. I don't want to hear from you again before tomorrow morning." It was good to have him take control of her life. For the first time since that terrible night at the Oasis, she felt secure and safe. Still, she made one last gesture of independence and self-reliance. She flushed the Mogadon sleeping tablet down the toilet. The nightdress that was laid on her pillow was full-length sheer silk, with finest cambrai lace at the cuffs and throat. She had never worn anything so luxurious and sensual against her skin before. She realized that it must have belonged to his wife, and the knowledge stirred mixed emotions in her. She climbed up into the four-poster bed, but even that lonely expanse of over-soft mattress and her unfamiliar surroundings did not keep her too long from sleep.